Total Screen proudly presents their official podcast, On Screen, with your hosts, Tyson Gifford and William Roerig.
Everybody, and welcome to On Screen, the official podcast of the Total Screen. My name is Tyson.
My name is Will.
And today we are going to be talking about part two of season two of Invincible. We're also going to be covering a few news stories related to Game of Thrones spinoffs, a few trailers that have come out in the past week, and what's coming up on the horizon, which we got quite a few things there. So let's get started with our On the Horizon segments. On the Horizon is where we talk about what's coming up in the next week or so, and we're going to be starting off with The Sympathizer. We mentioned the trailer for this a while ago, but this is the series that's about North Vietnamese or North Korea, I think it's North Vietnamese, spy infiltrating the U.S. And it's the one with Robert Downey Jr. playing like multiple roles.
Yes.
Not the North Vietnamese spy. He's not doing yellow face, you know, but he's playing a bunch of the different roles in it. And, it looks like a good HBO Max show. That's coming on Sunday, April 14th to HBO and Max. Also coming to Max on Thursday, April 18th is Conan O'Brien Must Go. This is his long awaited travel show. He has his podcast, and as part of his podcast, he interviews like celebrities, but then they did like kind of a side podcast thing that's like half the length that they put up every week as well, where he interviews like one of his fans that like contacts them, and then they contact the fan and they talk that the fan and find out like what they kind of do for a living and stuff like that. And then this show, Conan O'Brien Must Go, is like, it's a return to his travel shows, but it's based on the people, the fans he's talked to in the podcast. So it's like him going and visiting fans that called him up on his podcast before and like visiting them in their home countries and stuff and exploring their home countries. So this is his long awaited return to TV, Conan O'Brien. Thursday, April 18th on Max. Also on Thursday, April 18th, Final Fantasy 16, The Rising Tide is coming to PS5. This is the DLC for the game. And then on Friday, April 19th, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver comes to Netflix. This is, of course, Zack Snyder's take on Star Wars, the second one. On Friday, April 19th, The Spiderwick Chronicles is coming to the Roku channel as a limited series. This was previously adapted as a movie that started off the series and just, it never picked up. It never really went anywhere. So it's kind of like the Percy Jackson series in the sense that it was like a movie, the movie didn't work, and now they're doing it as a TV series. Also on Friday, April 19th, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare comes to movie theaters. This is the one that's Guy Ritchie, and it's Henry Cavill starring with a bunch of a big group of mercenaries in World War II. Then also on Friday, April 19th, also in theaters, Abigail. This is the ballerina vampire girl one that we covered the trailer for before. It's a little girl being kidnapped and held by a group of people, and then it finds out that they're actually being fed to this vampire, who's that little ballerina girl. And it's from the creators of Ready or Not, and that's coming to theaters on April 19th. Sasquatch Sunset is that weird Bigfoot movie, a Sasquatch movie with like Jesse Eisenberg in it. And it's just, I think it's like a movie it's being done kind of like a nature film, except it's fictitious and about Sasquatches or something. And that's coming on April 19th to theaters as well. And also on Friday, April 19th in theaters is the Spy X Family Code White anime movie. So if you like the Spy X Family anime series, this is a movie of it. And that's coming on Friday, April 19th to theaters. That is it for our On the Horizon segment, and now we're moving on to On Beat.
On Beat.
On Beat is our news segment. We got two news stories related to Game of Thrones spinoff series, and then we've got four trailers to cover after that. Let's get started. That the leads have been cast in the new Game of Thrones spinoff series, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight. This is of the Game of Thrones spinoff series that have been in development. This is the one that actually is based on something. It's based on a novella. I guess House of the Dragon is also based on something. It's based
a novella on a series, because it's, yeah, it's not even finished.
So, House of the Dragon is based on the Fire and Blood, which is kind of like a history, a fictitious history book, I guess.
Yeah.
And then this one is actually based on a novella series. I think there's like five of them out or something like that.
Yeah. It's called like the Dunkin' Egg series. The Hedge Knight is like the name of like the first novella of the five.
Yeah. It's basically, it's following two characters. It's Sir Duncan the Tall and Egg. And Duncan the Tall is actually like an ancestor of Brienne of Tarth.
Yeah, Duncan the Tall is a knight, obviously. Hedge Knight. Egg is his squire, who also happens to be with the future ruler.
He is in Aegon Targaryen.
Yes.
It's a common name. Aegon's like throughout the Targaryen line, and he's Aegon Targaryen, but he's nicknamed Egg as an EGG because he's bald.
Right, yeah. He's nicknamed Egg because he's bald. He is not the Aegon that they kill, that they have the big war over with the Starks and like the Baratheons and stuff, and which leads to
Robert taking the fight. Well, that wasn't Aegon. That was, can't remember his name. Starts with an R. It's not Aegon. Aegon, the other Aegons you would think of is the one who's sitting on the throne currently in House of the Dragon is an Aegon. And also the Conqueror, the guy that he didn't start the Targaryen family, but he's the one that came to Westeros. Like the first Targaryen to come to Westeros was an Aegon as well.
Yes. I mean, yeah. The Conqueror of Westeros was named Aegon. That's why it's such a popular name.
That's also what they said Jon Snow's real name was.
Yeah, that's why it's such a popular name among the Targaryens, because Aegon the Conqueror, you know? Yeah.
So in this, Duncan the Tall is being played by Peter Claffey, who is in Vikings Valhalla, and Egg is being played by Dexter Soul and Sel from The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, which is the Hunger Game spinoff.
No clue who these people are, which is fine.
They're kind of less no ones, but I mean that was the case with Game of Thrones, except for what, you know, Sean Bean and Lena Headey were the only ones I think I knew.
Yeah, I knew ahead of time. Yeah, exactly.
And then in House of the Dragon, it just Matt Smith was the only.
Yeah,
one
Matt. Yeah, Matt Smith. Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, these shows are full of newcomers and unknowns, and you know they've all did fantastic jobs. So like I'm optimistic. I don't have any reason not to be at this point.
But basically, I think this is kind of Game of Thrones Lone Wolf and Cub in a sense. It's basically like it's the adventures of a very tall knight and his squire who's very young.
I haven't read any of the stories and novellas, so I have no clue what goes on. So
that's the read I got off of it. It's kind of that, except it's less about, you know, being protective of the little kid and more like it's the guy's squire.
Oh yeah. Well,
but it's an adult running around with a little kid.
It has more agency. It's not like something like The Mandalorian or Lone Wolf and Cub, where like they're literally taking care of like an infant.
Well, I mean, The Last of Us is also like a Lone Wolf and Cub, and that's, you know, she has some agency.
Sorta. She's older. She has a lot of agency. Actually,
Lone Wolf and Cub,
the
kid grows up and has agency. And,
right.
And
right,
Grogu
yeah.
has agency too in The Mandalorian because he has force powers.
I'm not saying that they didn't. I'm just saying it's a little different.
Technically, Grogu's the oldest of all of those. Because Grogu's 50 when we're introduced to him. He may be like a baby, but he's 50. But anyways, that's the casting story for that. Those are the two leads, and they've been cast. And the other news we have related to Game of Thrones spinoff series is that Kit Harington was in development with a Jon Snow series that was going to follow Jon Snow after the show, which everybody was kind of like, why?
Yeah, like, exactly. You know,
it's just him hanging out with the wildlings beyond the wall, like putz around.
Well, he said like they couldn't come up with a story everybody was happy with, and I'm like, well, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you do that show.
I think if you're going to do a Jon Snow show, it should be like way later. Like it should be like Jon Snow when he's like 60, you know?
Right.
And some other big event happens and he gets drawn into it, you know? But like if you create a big story that's something happening with Jon Snow, it almost becomes like a betrayal of Game of Thrones. It's like now you're diminishing the severity of the events of Game of Thrones. You know? know? Like saying, right. like, oh, big things like this happen all the time, apparently. This happened just years later, you know?
Right.
Or you can do a really small adventure, but who really wants that? You want something big and meaty, you know? So it's like, it would make more sense if it's like Jon Snow and he's like 60 or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In a Lone Wolf and Cub story. That's the thing. Him taking care of a little wildling child when he's like 60, you know, and like a big event happening. Slowly he gets revealed to this child that, you know, he's actually this important figure from the past or something. That would be the kind of show you would do. But obviously Kit Harington isn't old enough for something like that yet.
I wouldn't want to see that show. I'm sorry. we should just redo Lone Wolf and Cub with every character in the world.
Yeah, we should. We definitely should. That's the outline. That's the trope. It's the trope that everyone's doing now. And then, of course, Kit Harington will be replaced playing Jon Snow by Pedro Pascal.
Because
it's in his contract that if there's a Lone Wolf and Cub show, that he's the Lone Wolf.
Of course.
But that is it for our regular news. And then we have a few trailers that came out, starting off with Tales of the Empire, which is a kind of sequel to the Tales of the Jedi, which itself was an anthology, animated anthology series on Disney Plus for Star Wars. And this one is kind of in the same vein, except it's going to focus on people from the Empire, the villains, basically.
Yeah, the villains. I thought it was going to be Tales of the Sith, but I guess not.
Well, they probably have a wider range than just Sith, because I think Lucas really shot himself in the foot when he did the whole thing in the prequels, making a big deal about how there's only ever two Sith around at one time, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's only, like...
it just kind of, like, destroyed the lore possibilities for that by limiting it so much. But it makes sense to do, you know, with Tales of the Empire, then you can focus on all sorts of people within the Empire rather than just Vader and the Emperor as the only two Sith. But yeah, that's coming. So if you're excited for Tales of the Jedi, then you should be excited for Tales of the Empire. And next up, we got a trailer for City Hunter. This is a new manga/anime adaptation, live action for Netflix. I completely forgot what City Hunter was about. You know, I knew the name. Watching the trailer, I still don't really quite remember.
I know it's an anime and a manga. I don't know anything about it or what it's about. Never looked into it.
It's got that very late 70s, early 80s kind of anime vibe to it, though, with like the kind of weird, goofy protagonist.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like very much like of its time. Pre-Dragon Ball Shonen type stuff.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, City Hunter, I mean, it looks fun. It looks similar to like Yu Yu Hakusho or something, like a kind of a lower budget, fun anime adaptation.
Anime, yeah, exactly.
Then we got a trailer for Maxine. That's with three X's in the middle. This is the latest in the trilogy, or the last in the trilogy, I believe, if it remains a trilogy, which started with X, which was a horror movie, and then X was a horror movie. It took place, I think, in the 70s, and it was they were filming a porn in a
farm,
on a farm,
farmhouse, and the owners were very homicidal.
And then they did a prequel called Pearl that was about the killer from X, I guess. And now they have Maxine, which is following the lone survivor of the X movie as she's trying to go kind of mainstream, from porn to like mainstream, I guess, in Hollywood.
Her whole thing was she was doing like the porn movies because like she dreamed of being like involved in Hollywood, being like a movie star. And I guess like she's still like is holding on to that and she's pursuing it. And unfortunately, this is set in the 80s during the time, you know, when the Night Stalker is active.
Yes.
You
know, Richard Ramirez, the real life serial killer that they've now woven into this story.
Yes.
So that's interesting.
And they got like a lot of big names, you know, like great actors in this too. Seeing, you know, like obviously we got Goth, but like Kevin Bacon's in this. Giancarlo Esposito in like a ridiculous looking wig is in this.
He's Bobby in that Abigail movie that we talked about in On the Horizon too.
Yes, he is. He is showing up a lot.
Yeah, he's popping up in like these little small roles everywhere.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I've been rewatching Breaking Bad and just finished season 3, so I'm seeing him a lot. I'm seeing Gustavo Fring everywhere.
It's Gustavo Fring's world. We just live in it.
Yeah. And then the big trailer of the week, the by far the biggest trailer of the week, is Joker Folie à Deux.
This is yes,
the this is the Joker, the Joaquin Phoenix non-DCEU connected movie. It's like a standalone. The first one was made kind of, it was basically almost a remake of Kings of Comedy, the Martin Scorsese film.
Yes.
From the 70s. It was almost like a remake of that, but done with kind of the character of the Joker and stuff, and not really about Batman, just about the Joker and kind of how he became how he was. Very grounded, but like, you know, early Martin Scorsese type movie, like a Taxi Driver type movie, because it's basically Kings of Comedy. And yeah, that was a great movie, got really well reviewed. It was, got a lot of money, was very successful. And now they're making a sequel. And this one is supposedly a musical. And
yeah,
it introduces, Harley Quinn as portrayed by Lady Gaga.
Yes. It actually looks really good too.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one was really good. So hopefully the second one holds up to the standards of the first one. There's a lot of parallels. I already saw like a tweet somebody posted where they were showing scenes from Joker next to scenes from the trailer
for
Folie à Deux. And they're like, just, there's a lot of thematic, similarities that they're introducing in the two. So I think that's interesting. And I'm intrigued by the musical aspect of it and how that's going to work out. So, but that is it for our on-beat segment. And that leaves only full spoilers. This week on Full Spoilers, we are talking about Invincible Season 2, Part 2. Last time we talked about Invincible, Will wasn't too keen on how Season 2 was developing. The pieces weren't coming together. It was unfortunately, Season 2 is a victim of its own structure and the fact that they had a delay because of the strikes and they needed to put something out. And so they put part of the season out, but the season wasn't really structured to handle that. So tell me, how do you feel about Season 2 of Invincible now that you've seen it in its totality?
No, I think it works a lot better because like all that stuff comes together in the second half.
Yeah.
Which is really a shame that it was cut in two like that. Because you tell it was designed, you know, to be viewed, you know, all at once. It wasn't designed to be cut in half. And that's why it suffers. Because like the first half, it goes all over the place. And you're kind of like, okay, because like you can't, my problem with the first half was like, it didn't feel like you could like get into like a groove of a story. Cause like they're constantly switching focus to something else with the next episode or whatever. It all comes together in the second half. Like all those threads come together and it's more cohesive and more coherent in the back half.
Yeah. It seems like going after season one, we really wanted to dive deep into the Viltrumite storyline. And they didn't really do that initially with season two. They started introducing these other threads. And then where they left off halfway through season two was they were finally getting back to the Viltrumite stuff. But all the other stuff that had happened in the season just seemed like out of place. Like it wasn't like necessary anymore. Like why was it even there? And then when you watch the whole thing, you realize like, okay, well, this is like a living world that they're trying to create here. And they want like things to be going on. Like the whole world's not just waiting for Viltrumite's story to continue on. Like there's other things, other events happening within this world, in this universe. And we need to kind of get those into place. And then it's like, well, then you can't really have a focused story if you're like dividing your attention. But when all of it comes together, I think what I realized is that a lot of the stuff is being used more for thematic purposes than necessarily for the stronger purposes of the plot. Like they set up the character of Angstrom Levy, who's the multiverse traveling guy.
Yeah.
They set him up in the first part of season two, like right at the very beginning. And it's like, okay, so why are we focusing on this guy? We want to be dealing with Viltrumites. Why are we dealing with this guy? They eventually come back and he's kind of the big bad of season two by the end of it. But it's for a thematic purpose more than for that story in particular, if you know what I mean. Like it's also that they can basically parallel what happened happened at the end of season one and show like Mark losing his cool and yeah. how, and the results of that and like how Mark has to deal with that as a character thing. So the character of Engstrom Levy is there not for like the larger overarching plot so much as it is for like Mark's character story.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which I think that all that stuff works really well when you get the whole season, but when you're getting it like as they presented it in half, it's kind of like, where's this going? Why do I care about this guy? I don't really care about this guy. Come on, just get back to the Viltrumites. And then mm-hmm. you're like, okay, yeah, but there's more going on in this world. Like, you can't just have the Viltrumite story. Then you don't really have an interesting world, and you need to have an interesting world and interesting characters in that. And that means that there needs to be all sorts of other stuff going on at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
So I really dug that. I even dug, and I'm going to break the fourth wall here a little bit and say that we recorded our half of our discussion of this, of what we're doing right now before, but we had some internet issues that caused it to basically be thrown out. So we're redoing it. So I'm just going to kind of broach the topic that we had come up with there, which is that you weren't too much of a fan of some of the more kind of meta elements. And of that, one of the elements that I brought up that I liked, but you weren't too much of a fan of, was the way that they brought back the scene that was in season one of this like Egyptian deity or something that wants to like possess somebody. And a guy was like trying to dig up this deity, and it was like, oh, what's going on? And then it turned out to be like a whole nothing burger. It was just a joke almost. And then they brought it back in this season and continued the joke in the same way.
Yeah, just to do another goofy joke again with it. It's, I mean, I don't know, like, it was fine the first time they did it, but they have to do it again, like, I don't know, it's just like, I didn't care for that.
I thought it was funny.
Like you animated
it. I thought it was funny, and it was even more so funny that it happened after they had already done it. It's like, oh wait, we're doing this again? Okay, it's kind of like the audacity of it is what made it funny to me. And so it became funny in kind of a meta way for me, which I know you're not as into like meta humor as I am, so that would make sense why you wouldn't be as into it as I would. But I really enjoyed that. You in particular mentioned last time that what you really didn't like was the scene where Mark was talking to the creator of a comic book that he particularly loves, and then they had this whole meta commentary about animation.
I've seen the same meta commentary on animation and like other shows, more comedy oriented shows. It just felt so out of pocket here. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like, okay, and then like more serious shit happens. Yeah, you can have levity and humor in this, but this is like gag, like Simpsons or Family Guy, like style humor, like inserted in the middle of like this serious, you know, this drama show. You know, I guess they were dunking on people complaining about the animation or whatever. I don't know. And it was just like, okay, that was kind of stupid. That was just the reaction I had.
See, I loved it. And it's the same reason why I mentioned before. It's like the audacity is what I loved about it.
Yeah.
It's the audacity of them doing a scene like that in the middle of the show. It's just like, you know, there's other shit going on and then they just do that.
Yeah.
The audacity of that is what makes it hilarious to me.
I can see that. I can get that. That reasoning does make sense to me.
So let's talk about Martians, because a big storyline that they were setting up, I mean, there was bits of it in season one too, but more so they were setting up in season two, is that basically the events of season one that had to do with Mars is that Mark went there and he was trying to rescue these astronauts, but Earthlings being on Mars ended up being a problem because there were all of these kind of parasitic creatures that are like of a hive mind, and they couldn't infect the Martians, but they could infect like regular people, like these astronauts. And then that allows them to kind of rise up against the Martians and could potentially create havoc anywhere. And that was like a plot. It was in season one. And at the very beginning of this season, of this half of season two, I should say, they have to go back to Mars because there's a shuttle coming from Mars to Earth and they need to like find out what's going on. And they end up finding out like, oh, there's these parasites on board, and they have to carefully pick the teams because they have to pick people like Immortal and Invincible who can't be infected by this parasite to go against the parasite. They also need a few people who can be infected by it just because they have other expertise that they need. Like, like right. Adam Eve and
well, they don't have like a full team of people immune to these things, so you know, it's kind of like, you know, they are limited.
Yeah, so they have, you know, they need Rudy/Robot, they need him there for his technical expertise, and they needed Adam Eve there for some of her abilities and what she can do to kind of make the mission work. And when they're going off there, then the team gets divided. So the other members of the team that are like more human, that would be like being able to be taken over, that also don't have another purpose they can serve, like, for example, Duplicate or Rexplode or Shrinking Ray. Like, those people, they're like left alone. And they're like, oh, this is going to be an easy time for us. We're just going to hang out at home and order pizza, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
But one thing that we saw the last half of this season.
Was the Snake Men, right?
Yeah, the Snake Men, the lizard people or Snake Men or whatever coming back.
Whatever that lizard group is called. Yeah.
And him coming back and, you know, like, oh, these people are going to be in this again, I guess. Okay. And so they come in and play a part here, but it goes brutally because, man, the lizard people, one in particular, just dismantles basically everybody, seemingly yes. kills everybody.
It is incredibly brutal and shocking. Like, it goes sideways in the worst way possible.
Yeah. It's funny because it's, in the end, nobody died. Like, right. from our little heroes team, nobody from that yeah. team died.
I mean, the Snake Men sure as heck died. But yeah. yeah,
but like none of our characters died, you know, none of like the characters we're following died, but like we thought they all had, basically.
Yeah. And like I have like my own like problems with that, because it's the same thing that like The Boys does a lot, where it's kind of like, oh, shocking thing happens, and like, psych, no, we're returning to status quo like pretty fast here.
I think it worked a little bit better than some of the stuff you're talking about, simply because there was like character change that happened.
Yes. Like especially like Rexplode, and like the trauma, like he went through, like genuinely like triggers a change in him.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did. Yeah, I did enjoy seeing like that character arc and that character journey. And as a tool for that, I think like, yeah, that worked spectacularly. I did genuinely think they would like leave, like even if they brought like Duplicate back or something, I genuinely believe they would leave like at least one of them dead.
Yeah, to, like, Shrinking Ray seems like an obvious yeah. choice.
Yeah.
I think one thing that, and this relates to both The Boys and Invincible, both shows, by the way, you know, produced by Seth Rogen and his partner. So there's like a commonality there, you know? And I think that one thing that they like to do is they like to kind of go into a situation, make it look like, oh, something really brutal is going to happen. They have that happen. And then they kind of, they turn on it like it's going back to stasis, like you said. But then they use that as like motivation to do something else that they find more interesting. And I don't think it always works. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of something that they've been doing a lot of. And it goes back to before The Boys and everything. Like, this kind of stuff is happening in like Creature, for example, as well, you know? But I think specifically, I believe Shrinking Ray died in the comic books in that scene.
Oh,
and,
really?
And they kept her alive, but she's like in a coma or like in a bed. Like, she's not in good shape.
Right.
And, you know, they brought back Duplicate and Rexplode. Rex was never supposed to die. He didn't die at the very, you know, he didn't really die at all in the scene in general. Duplicate, right. We thought was dead, but they brought her back. In the comic book, apparently they brought Duplicate back in like a more interesting way, like in a more dramatic way. The reveal
and like she was just like hiding somewhere, and like,
well, that's the duplicates what that happened, she was fighting with. The way they presented it was a little different, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Right. I haven't read the comics. I've just seen like some critiques of it, basically, where they've mentioned it, you know. And apparently, they kind of showed. They did in the comic books. They did a whole sequence where they showed the way Duplicate's power worked, and then that's how you realized that she was still around and that she was like, you know, isolated and stuff. And it wasn't like she just showed up in Immortals' cabin, you know. like they actually did kind of a setup routine or something, which they didn't do here. But I think what they're going to do with Shrinking Ray is that they're going to hit on something else with that character. Because she's kind of a nothing character before all this, you know? Like, yeah. I didn't even remember her character. Was she even in this before? Or was she just kind of like, she's also on the team?
She was in this. I'm sure of it.
I don't even remember her. Like, I'm not doubting you. I'm just like, I don't remember her, you know? Until like this part, I'm thinking they're going to do something to kind of play on the idea of like how this trauma could make somebody not be able to be a superhero anymore. And then how that makes them feel disconnected from the people they knew and the people they were close to and the family. Like, that's what I think is going to be coming for her character. Like, I don't think they're just going to have her show up and be on the team again. I think they're going to make it like, she's no longer going to be a superhero. And now she has to deal with that. I don't know if that's going to be interesting at all as a story conceit, but I kind of have a feeling that that's why they let her survive. Because, like I said, her character in particular, I believe, did die in the comics.
Oh, for sure.
And then,
yeah.
And then
for sure, they're going to do like a character journey with her. Like, yeah, for sure.
But it's not going to be like a character journey like, she's back on the team. It's going to be a character journey like, this is what can happen to somebody if they're horribly injured when they're on a mission, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
What else should we talk about here? We need to talk about, I guess, Mark's brother, who was introduced in the first
There's not much to say about that. It's just the fact that, like, yeah, we knew, like, from the first half that Mark's dad, Omni-Man, you know, went to this planet and had another child with this alien bug woman. And because he was captured after the fight with the Viltrumites, and because the bug people aged so quickly, they asked Mark to take his brother home and raise him. And so that's kind of like a new angle that Mark and his mother are like trying to deal with raising this kid. There's not really much happening with that at the moment. It's just that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So not much to say there.
The only interesting thing to it, I think, has to do with Mark's mom, with Debbie Grayson, and kind of her having to come to grips with, you know, having affection for this child that's like her husband's infidelity, basically.
Yeah, right.
But it's not only her husband's infidelity, but it's like her husband who almost murdered her son and destroyed the world and called her a pet. His infidelity, like, and kind of the complicated emotions of that and the kind of relationship between her and Mark and her wanting Mark to stay in school. Cause that's like a big story conceit, I think, that they worked their way through in the second half of the season, is that Mark was trying to have the dual life as, like, you know, he was trying to be a student and go to college and everything and all of that. And I think one of the in ways they did for how this is going to be complicated for Mark is his brother, and the fact that his mom just got a new job or her old job back, and now she's going to have to be taking care of this kid. And, you know, is he doesn't feel right about that, like he feels maybe he should be doing it, but then he has the school and then also the superhero life. And that's kind of like, I think, their early inroads into dealing with his conflicts of his double identity.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then they go in a more interesting place with it by the end, where you realize that this is just not something that's doable for him anymore. Like, he can't carry on this relationship with Amber. It's not fair to her. He can't rely on his mom to take care of this child entirely. She has to kind of give up some control to this nanny who works for Cecil's organization. And she has to kind of like figure that out. And then Mark has to figure out a way to kind of stay in his life and be a superhero and stuff, and can't really do all of that while still being Mark Grayson.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Which
yeah.
I'm glad is something they got to in this season, because it's the kind of thing that if they hadn't gotten to it, it could be like really annoying when you get to like Invincible season 4 and he's still like trying to shuffle his double life kind of thing. So I'm glad it kind of seems like they left that behind.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like they tackled it head on, like up front, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like the way the season ends, you know, we get the whole thing out. There was the female Viltrumite that comes down and, you know, like threatens.
That was a really good tense scene. I like the way they introduced it. Like, she shows up and she's not in frame. You just hear her voice and you kind of see Mark's reaction. And then you see her. And then in the next shot you see is like her hand around Amber's neck.
Yes.
And it's like the threat is more important than introducing the character yet, you know? And,
right.
And I like the way all of that was done and handled. I like the way they did just even the effects of a Viltrumite going all out. We saw it a little bit with Omni-Man and kind of when he was dragging his son's face through a subway and murdering like all of Chicago pretty much. We saw a little bit of that about like how brutal a Viltrumite can be when you have that kind of power.
Yeah.
But I love the way they did things. Like, I love that Mark was struggling fighting this, like, Kraken creature, and she just, like, zooms right through it and then stops so fast that all the blood flies off of her.
Yeah.
Like, it's exactly. Just the effect of that. I think that's one thing that this show has done exceptionally well is just the way they show kind of the power of the Viltrumites and show, like, how scary that can be.
Yeah.
And
the fact that, like, even this one Viltrumite, Mark can't even, like, stand up to her.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, so, I love that. And thematically, I love how they touched on that when we got in the season finale, we got to see kind of Engstrom Levy's different multiverse personas and how they experienced Invincible. And
yes.
You see how brutal those different versions of Invincible are, like murdering his son in front of him. And like, but I think the shot that like really just kind of drove home the kind of like craziness of the Viltrumites was like when he was walking down the line, just chopping people's heads off.
Yeah, with his hand, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like karate chopping people's heads off. Yeah, that was crazy. It shows like that threat. And then there's another storyline.
At the end of the first half of season two, Omni-Man was captured by the Viltrumites and was being put to death. Apparently that doesn't happen right away. They need, you know, Viltrumite to recover and basically be at full health before they can kill him.
Yeah.
So he's on this like prison ship in recovery. Meanwhile, we have this whole thing with Alan, the alien.
Yes.
Where Alan we thought is alive. He had died.
Yeah.
In the first half of season.
Again,
two.
They did the thing again.
Viltrumite Optimus Prime, who we find out is a Viltrumite, which, by the way, I thought that was hilarious when he pulls off the beard and he just has the mustache. And that's how, like, he revealed his secret identity as a Viltrumite.
Right,
all the Viltrumites have these mustaches. You know?
Yeah, they all have the mustaches. Viltrumites can't have beards, silly. Yeah.
I just cracked up. I was, like, laughing so hard.
Yeah, that was great. That was great. That was legitimately one of the best jokes they did. Yeah, he just, like, reaches off. Like, that was his entire disguise. Apparently like a fake beard, but yeah,
Viltrumites have mustaches, not beards.
He reveals to Alan that, you know, like that he is a Viltrumite and that like he is like the first Viltrumite or something to rebel against the Empire, and now like there are others like Omni-Man and Invincible that have also rebelled. He wants to recruit them, you know, for his fight against the Viltrumite Empire.
Mm-hmm. And Alan, it's interesting, the reason why he disconnected him and let him die, basically, is that it was a gamble. It was like he needed Alan to become stronger, and something about Alan and the way he was created, which we got a little tease of before when we were
Alan was
his character.
Part of a program by his race, his species, to create members of that race who could take on Viltrumites.
Yeah, but Alan obviously couldn't. He got taken out pretty easily.
Yeah.
By some Viltrumites. But then after recovery, now he's just like right on their level.
Yeah. And it's hammered home because like we see like Alan flying in space, you know, and then we see like he comes across the Viltrumite prison ship, or like they notice him and they pull up right next to him, and then like out comes the woman that Invincible was fighting.
Yeah,
Nissa, who she was handing Invincible his ass, but she starts fighting Alan, and Alan is like not even like breaking a sweat against this Viltrumite.
Yeah, it's funny because he gets hit and he goes flying away, and then he's like, huh, that didn't hurt.
Yeah.
And he's like, I wonder, and he like runs up to her and smacks her and makes her bleed.
Yeah, exactly. So we've already seen how strong she is. So, you know.
Yeah. And then he allows himself to be captured. Like, he gets knocked out or whatever. It looks like he gets knocked out. And then as he's being dragged to the Viltrumite ship, you see him, like, his eye open and he's smiling, like, haha.
Oh, yeah. Well, because that was the goal. He found the prison ship where Omni-Man was being kept. Uh-huh. So, you know, he has to get in there, and, well, the easiest way in is to just let himself be captured.
Yeah. It's interesting is before that, we had an encounter where he found Invincible and was trying to get recruit Invincible. Invincible's like, I can't join. There's too much going on here right now. I can't leave.
Yeah, he's had too much going on in with his personal life. So.
Yeah. And he said, but I do have something. And it was his father's books that we got the tease of at the end of the first half of this season that show kind of experiences that other Viltrumites have had with like other species, things that could hurt them, basically. So now he's got all these books that are written as fiction, but they're like, basically, like when Mark was describing it, Alan's like, yeah, this species sounds familiar. Like this, I know of this species. It's, and
they're close to taking down the Viltrumites.
Yeah. So Alan is coming armed with that as well, you know, like, and coming for Omni-Man. And, the rest of the storyline we get with Omni-Man is that he misses his wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's talk about the final episode and kind of the big events that happen there. So with all of Mark's shit going on in his personal life and stuff, he ends up getting a phone call from Angstrom Levy saying, like, you need to return home, Mark. And Angstrom Levy's got his family held hostage. And Mark comes back and immediately gets, like, knocked into, like, several different multiverses. And Angstrom Levy's just basically playing with Invincible. He's, you know, Mark can't really do anything against him. He just keeps getting knocked into different dimensions. And what's really funny about this, and I mentioned it to you before you watched the episode, I said, I'm like, keep an eye out for all the cool cameos.
Oh, there is. Yeah, there's like a Spider-Man and a Dr. Octopus.
Yeah.
There's literally
Agent
Batman.
Spider, I guess they called him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's literally Batman, but they obviously don't show him.
Yeah, they don't show him. Show, they just have
part of a cape.
They just have Mark saying, like, so you dress like a bat and you're a man. I just think the name's kind of lazy.
We see Mark come out of a portal with one of the iconic guns from Fortnite.
There was a Walking Dead universe that he was in.
Yeah, it was a Walking Dead universe, which they confirmed like that means Invincible in Fortnite is canon to the series.
With the Walking Dead thing, it's important to remember that the creator of the Invincible comic is Robert Kirkman.
He created the Walking Dead. He also was the writer and creator of Marvel Zombies. So, yeah, so that was definitely like a nod or reference to that.
Yeah. But yeah, so he's getting knocked around all these different dimensions. And then he ends up fighting Angstrom Levy, who's been upgraded by different doctors from different dimensions that have like upgraded his body and made him stronger. And he toys with Invincible enough that Invincible and him are fighting and they end up on this like derelict, like post-apocalyptic world, not like zombie, but like just, you know, runes and sand type, like Mad Max kind of almost world. And nobody's there. It's like the entire world's dead or something. And he's fighting Angstrom Levy there and he's completely loses control and just goes homicidal on him and just beats him to death in a scene that very much parallels what happened to him in the season one finale. It's very much showing like the way a Viltrumite can lose control and just become super aggressive and how that's like a Viltrumite trait and how that's something that Mark's been resisting and holding back and he lost control and how much that has an impact on him because he kills Angstrom Levy. Now he's trapped in this other dimension and he's there. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, we see a very different looking Guardians of the Globe show up.
Yeah.
And it's like, is this from a different dimension? And apparently it's from his future.
Yeah, because it takes them like that long to locate him where he is.
Yeah, and they're able to send him back to his own time and where he came from, but, you know, they're kind of not. And there's a few interesting things there. Eve tells him that she loves him and that he needs to tell Eve either that he loves her or that he doesn't to, like, let her off the hook so she can move on with her life. But also, after all of that happens, like, Robot takes his helmet off and he's like, I thought we weren't going to fuck up the time stream. And she says, like, fuck you, Rex.
Yeah, it's Rex and the robot.
Which, of course, you know, Robot Rudy is, like, a clone of Rex with, like, Rudy's mind.
Right.
Implanted in it. And so we just thought that was Rudy. And then he takes out the helmet. It looks kind of like Rex. It's like, oh, yeah, but because it's Rudy, you know? But then we get revealed that that's Rex in his suit for some reason, which is just kind of like a setup for something bad that's probably going to happen later on.
Probably.
But he ends up getting back. He encounters Adam Eve in his own time, but never tells her either that he loves her or that he doesn't. He doesn't follow through. Thing.
He needs to follow through next season. They need to not like play games with this.
But that's
the season. Two of Invincible. Overall, what are your overall thoughts of like the entire season?
I really dug it as a whole. I see your points about the first half and how disjointed it felt by itself. And I saw that at the time too, but I think I was a little bit more forgiving of just the fact that it's like they didn't want to split the season in two. Like they had to because of the strike. Nothing was structured for that. So I'm not going to judge it until I see the rest of it. And once I got the rest of it, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it was a massive step up from the rest of it. And it shows like a natural progression. I really liked it. I think I like it more than season one overall. Like having seen the whole thing, I think they went into some more interesting areas. And yeah, I'm excited to see more.
Oh yeah, same. As a whole, it was good. I'm looking forward to season three now. That's good. Hopefully season three doesn't suffer the same way with being split. But yeah, like I did enjoy the season, like after all. So
it's interesting because Amazon has been doing the thing, like when they first started doing content, they were putting up like everything at once, just like Netflix does. Then they started doing like, okay, we'll put out like half the season and then we'll air the rest of it. And then that half of the season turned into like, okay, well, this time we're just going to put up like the first three episodes and then the rest will be week to week. And then they started doing split seasons for some stuff, even before Invincible, I believe. Netflix has done this too. They've done split seasons as well. But like, so they played around. So like, there's a sense of like, okay, so now that Amazon's done this, it's kind of like the cat's out of the bag. They're just going to do this shit again. So that, you know, season three of Invincible, it's going to be a split season. They're going to stretch it out as much as they can. But then Amazon turns around and drops the entirety of Fallout at once. Not week to week, not like one chunk, but week to week, just all at once, like do. Netflix.
That's and who knows what's gonna happen, but yeah, that's all I have to say about this.
I'm hopeful that season three is gonna be good. It's probably gonna be a while. Remember how long it took for season two? I think it's been like 3 years or something.
It's probably gonna be a while to for sure, because like animation, it takes a bit, you know, like that's the thing.
It's gonna take a while, unfortunately. But I think they probably jumped into production sooner than they did with season two, because season one was such a huge hit that they had to like go, oh, season one's a big hit, let's order more for season two. But by the time season two came out, they already knew the show was a hit. So I think that they kind of were already planning to kind of go quickly into production with season three. So that should work out a little bit faster than season two. Hopefully we don't have any catastrophic events like what happened between season one and season two that end up causing other delays and stuff even further. But hopefully that comes out pretty soon. And until then, we have some more superhero stuff on Amazon coming. Like, we got the next season of The Boys coming up, you know?
Yep, for sure.
But that is it for this week's podcast and our discussion of Invincible Season 2, Part 2. Next week, we are going to be talking about Roadhouse, not the original movie, but the remake that is also on Amazon. So check that out. Watch that remake. It's the Jake Gyllenhaal one of Roadhouse, and that's what we'll be discussing next week. Until then, thank you everybody for listening. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Tyson Gifford. Will is at Fox of Hero. You can check out our website, thetotalscreen.com. If you go to our website and open up the container story for any of the podcast episodes, you'll find all of the relevant links at the bottom of that article. So go ahead and do that so you can get to our RSS feed, our SoundCloud page, everything. It's all there. You can also subscribe to the podcast through any podcast client of choice like Apple Podcasts or Pocket Cast. And the entire backlog of our podcast is available on our YouTube channel, as well as additional content like our old 300 episode podcast, The Weekly Set. All of that is available on our YouTube channel, including this current podcast on screen. So check all of that out. Thank you everybody for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the On Screen Podcast, the official podcast of The Total Screen. Visit our website at thetotalscreen.com. This podcast can be found on any major podcast client, including Pocket Cast, and Apple Podcast. The entire backlog of this podcast and other content can be found on our YouTube channel.